we want to save reserves so that we may need it for future rate cap, or we want to hold cash on the property because vacancy picked up a little bit. So it's just about education. We did protect ourselves with rate caps, thank goodness, when we purchased them over the last 2 years.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon, and we have Jenny Gu on the podcast today. She started Vertical Street Ventures with a few partners. She lives in Southern California, but started her real estate investing journey in single family out in Cincinnati, Ohio. Found a lot of deals and a lot of success in single family, but realized it was a bit too active for her. So she wanted to find something, another asset that she could scale and grow and be a little bit more passive. So she shifted in 2020 to multifamily. She's now retired from her corporate job and is 100% focused on real estate investing and has an academy where she actually teaches people how to invest, how to start the syndication journey. Very, very cool episode. So let's get Jenny on the pod. All right, Jenny, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for offering to be a guest.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Looking forward to this.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. Maybe give us a little bit of an overview of who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Great. So Jenny Gu, I am a full-time real estate investor and operator, worked in recovering sales person. So I spent 13 years in corporate America before discovering real estate, long-term rentals, traditional single family, and then quickly discovered, like I'm sure many other of your audience members, quickly discovered the power of multifamily. So we jumped over and now that's what I do 100%. I retired from corporate America back in early 2020 and have been doing this full-time since.
Well, that is a lot of interesting things I want to unpack here. So let's start with the beginning, right? So spent 13 years in corporate America. I think you said you were in sales. Is that kind of where you kind of lived your life in the corporate world?
Yes, I did sales strategies for a company called Procter & Gamble. Worked with top retailers, Walmart, Target, Amazon, Costco, et cetera. And really spent my time building relationships, setting sales strategies, managing a P&L, managing people. So all of that, you know, I'll call it corporate experience, really lent itself to helping me be successful in the real estate world today. So a lot of transferable skills from one industry over to the other. In this one, it was just spending time learning the lingo, learning all the key components of that. But I think it's the same. Managing an apartment is very similar to managing a business. It is managing a business.
It is a business. Yeah. It's typically they're bought by LLCs and you know, we sell shares to our investors and all that stuff. So exactly. Literally. And that's one of the interesting things to touch on your single family stuff that is different than a single family where that's much more step-by-step process. When you run an apartment complex, it literally is a business. So 13 years in corporate America, and then at what point did the light bulb turn on and real estate started to come into your kind of mindset of like, okay, I need to do something different? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. And I credit my husband, Ronnie, to getting us in. I would say he's more like the visionary, the person that gets the big, bright ideas.
Yep.
And then I am the executor. So I make it happen. I get things done. And so we started with single families first, just because we wanted to diversify. He and I both worked for P&G. So all of our retirement was in the company. And so we said, we got to diversify. And we just met the right people at the right time and got into single family. And he literally came home one day and said, Jenny, we're going to go buy apartments. And I thought he was insane because who can buy an apartment? No one thinks they can go buy an apartment. But then he talked about it a little bit more. He went to a Joe Fairless meetup in Cincinnati. Mm. That's where we lived at that time.
Okay.
And then he just got into it, gave me the download, and I was sold. And so that was really the light bulb. You know, we accumulated a handful of single families and it became a lot. Believe it or not, it's still active, no matter if you're have a third-party property management company managing it. It was still very active, but we said, how do we scale it so that it's more passive? And that's what we started to do with the multifamily side.
Got it. So let's talk about the single family stuff. I think that's where most investors start, right? Is they start what they know. And most people own a house or they've lived in a house at some point in their life. So they're like, okay, well, I'll go buy the house next to me. I'll rent it out. And so you were in Cincinnati and how did you kind of buy that first one? Because obviously it's a little bit scary when you think about investing, especially investing in real estate. So how did that first one happen?
We were so nervous. I mean, we had no idea what we were going to get ourselves into. First investment property, but after the first one, they always say the first property is your toughest one, but then afterwards it just comes really easy. We did as much due diligence as we could, read as many books, listened to podcasts. And so when we finally did it, we said, gosh, that wasn't as hard as we thought it was. And mind you, in the Midwest, not like Southern California, our first house was less than $100,000. Three bedroom, two bath. So the numbers just made total sense. And so if you could do that, we hit that 1% rule left and right in the Midwest. And so we bought one, then another, then another, and then four more, then another one. I mean, it just started rolling and rolling. There were even instances where we bought sight unseen, I should say, because we had such a great partner in our broker. I mean, we trusted her so much that we ended up buying properties that we didn't even have to go look at.
Yeah. And that's the best part about when you're in the Midwest, you can find properties that are more cashless. So you talked about the 1%. So people that don't know, what does that mean when they're looking at a single family house? Maybe that's what they're looking at is to start their journey. What does that mean?
Yeah. So for a long-term rental, there's a rule of thumb out there. If you can get 1% of the value of the house that you purchased as rent income, that is a golden standard. So if you bought a house for $100,000, your monthly rent, you should target at least $1,000. That's 1% of the purchase price. Now, that is feasible where cost of living markets are low, right? So Cincinnati is a great one. The Midwest typically hits the 1% rule of thumb. If you're on the coastal cities, that's a lot harder to try to hit with all the expenses.
Got it. And then it sounds like you accumulated a large handful, probably two handfuls of single family houses. Were they all clustered in the same geographic region around Cincinnati, or kind of how did that work? And then how did you manage those properties?
Yeah, they all ended up being in the Cincinnati region. We ended up leaving, so we're now here in Southern California. But because we had such a great broker who was also real estate agent was also our tenant finder. She also managed the property for us. So it was all in one. I think without her, we probably wouldn't have been able to scale so big so quickly on the single family side. You just have to find the right team to support whatever strategy that you have in place for yourself.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, especially we bought our first duplex. We lived in Philly, we bought in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So how about the first one, sight unseen? I didn't see it other than a video of it with my broker walking through it until I saw it during the inspection. So it is possible to do it. It's a little scary because you're trusting somebody that you probably have never met other than, a phone or a Zoom. So how do you kind of build that relationship with a broker and how do you find the right one, right? Because there's real estate agents, I'll call them, or realtors that are focused on, I want to help you find your dream house, right? And then you have investor focus or investor friendly real estate agents or brokers that understand that you're not looking for your forever house. You're looking for something that is going to be an asset for you and your family, right? From a cash flow perspective. So how do you differentiate the two? And maybe how do you find the one that's going to work for you?
It's all the relationship business, right? You have to get to know them, trust them. In this sense, in this scenario, she came to us as a referral. So we had a friend who referred us. She happened to work at the same CrossFit gym as my husband did. And so they got to know each other, built a relationship. And then we said, okay, let's test this out. It also helps because she is also an investor, right?
Got it.
So she's got investment properties. She knows exactly what an investor should be looking for, what makes things work, how much you should spend here to get the rent here. I mean, that one would, help you tremendously, especially if it's your first rental property. Someone who knows what you're looking for and has the experience or has been in your shoes as well is critical.
Yeah, I remember when I first started, I talked to a real estate agent friend of mine that was an investor in Philadelphia. And he's like, if you look for an agent, make sure you ask them if they invest also. Because if they don't invest themselves, then they're, to your point, they're not going to know what you're looking for. And it's not the best house still in the best block with the best schools necessarily. It's okay, this one's undervalued and you can buy it and you can raise the rents or whatever. You're going to be able to make this as a good investment. So,
and that goes for any partnership. So like, for example, we have our own CPA firm that is real estate investment focused. So our partner who leads the CPA firm, he also invests in real estate. And so he knows exactly what tax laws apply, which ones don't, what are the benefits. Same thing with the cost segregation company. Like each person has to be familiar with investing in order to give you the maximum benefits.
Yeah. I want to dig into that So the CPA firm, so did you start the firm or did you find a partner through conversations? Like, how did that start? It's very interesting because if you have a CPA firm or you use an accountant, to your point, if they're not really up on the real estate tax benefits, they may miss something that somebody that is an investor, because they're obviously looking out for themselves as well. Like, how do I pay as little taxes as legally possible? So how did that come about? That's interesting.
Yeah. So we met a partner who is a CPA, and we brought him into the company, our core syndication company, and given his experience and our expanding network of not just investors, but other syndicators and people in the business, we said it would make a ton of sense for us to launch a company that would benefit from his experience, but then also would benefit the company from an investor standpoint. And so consider it in-house in a sense, right? The CPA firm does our K-1s, it does a property K-1. So we get a lot of transparency and systems and processes that helps make everything more efficient.
Yeah, very interesting. I may want to talk to you offline about that. That's super fascinating. So you started your journey single family, right? And so we're about to jump into the multifamily side, because I'm assuming you're going to get to the point where you're like, I need to be less active, more passive, scale faster, bigger. And that's typically the inflection point of like, okay, let's stop buying onesies, twosies. Let's go up to 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. So, but before we jump into the multifamily side, let's take a quick sponsor break. So we will be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com. to see how they can help.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Jenny Gu on the pod. And so we got to the point where you were working a W-2. I'm assuming you're still working your W-2 while you're acquiring these single family houses, right? At what point did you then say, I want to go bigger? Or how did you make that shift? Because going from not investing to investing is a mindset shift, right? And then going from investing in single family to investing in large multi is another mindset shift. So you've kind of gone through a couple evolutions, if you will. So let's talk through kind of that shift from single family to the bigger stuff.
Yeah. And I think we have to back up a second and talk about the why.
Yeah. Right?
Why was there a need to even shift anything, right? We had something that was working. It wasn't broken. Sure. And so what really drove us to change our direction a bit was the fact that we had life events that happened that made us realize we wanted to prioritize family first. And in order to do that, we needed to move back to the West Coast.
Okay? Got it.
We had lived in the Midwest for 11 years. And so we said, okay, I'm always a big thing about right time, right place, right, meeting the right people. And so everything just kind of fell together in the sense that we had this experience in single families. We said, how do I spend more time with family, work less? I loved P&G. I just didn't love what I was doing. And so could passive income and real estate be my answer to get out and retire? Okay. So we said, yep, Jenny, we want you to leave and figure out a way to do real estate full time.
Right.
And that's when Ronnie started learning about multifamily. He came home with the idea and we said, you know what, with my skill set and my ability to manage everything from projects to people to businesses, it made sense for me to be the one to leave. And that's Got when it. We said, okay, done. Our single family income was enough to offset a portion of my income. Ronnie stayed behind to work full time still at P&G. Right. And so we took time to plan all this out. It doesn't just happen overnight. You can't just wake up and say, I'm done. So we mapped it all out. We did the math. And then we said, okay, this is our why. Multifamily is our how. Let's go do this. And then things started to happen from there.
So before we jump into the multifamily stuff, I think it's fascinating to understand the process that you both went through to potentially shrink expenses or condense things to make your life, you know, make that amount that you needed to hit from a passive income as little as possible, right? While still maintaining your lifestyle. Because my wife and I went through that before I decided to quit my job and start a business and focus on real estate, is we did that math, right? We sat down and said, okay, what's the most important thing that we, you know, can't live without? And what are the nice things that we can splurge on if we have the extra cash. And so we did that math and shrunk our lives when a lot of people are making more money and they're expanding and getting bigger houses and all that stuff. So maybe walk through that process, because I think that's super fascinating that most people, when they're hitting their stride, they're buying the nicer car and buying the bigger house and all that stuff. And you guys were probably thinking, how do we cut things versus how do we expand?
Right. Yeah, 100%. You have to do that exercise. And it's really about, our mindset was, we know that real estate is a long game. So our generational wealth will build over time. Mm-hmm. With properties and that we buy, sell, hold, refi, et cetera. But we started with the exercise of, what are your expenses? You guys, the same thing. What are your expenses? And what is the minimum income that needs to come in to cover? And then what's a buffer just for emergencies and just in case? So that we did that exercise. And once we found the magic number, then we said, okay, what do we need to go buy to then get that income to make up for that? And so that is working backwards, if you will, from that one magic number, and then that will develop your strategies and your tactics to get there. And I agree with you. We're not flashy. We don't need all that excess thing. We just want to be able to spend time how we want to spend it, and then have the flexibility to make choices differently. That was our main goal.
What's the saying? Live how others won't, so you can live how others can't in later in life. Like that's,
I like that. Yeah,
that's the name of the game, right? And so, you know, yes, you may be doing some small sacrifices in the short term, but if things go according to plan, it's going to be a blessing, because you won't be having to grind at a W-2 until you're 70, 80 years old, depending on what happens.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Can I touch on something else too? You know, 3 years ago, nobody expected the market to be the way that it is today. Right. Totally. Nobody did. I think we'd all make different choices. But knowing that, and this is just like a caution for folks in the mindset of, right, of wanting to retire in a few years, like, plan for downturns, just like what's happening right now, so that you're not in a pickle. I know of a few folks who may need to go back to work, right, because properties aren't distributing or cash flow is a little tighter across their portfolio. So you have to plan for that. And that's why that buffer is so important, because you don't know how long this period will last. Knock on wood, hopefully it ends next year. But just, you have to plan for these things, because you just don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I talk a lot about, like, a lot of people think about, like, financial freedom is like the ultimate goal, right? I talk a lot about, like, building a financial foundation. And that's kind of like your buffer, right? Is like, you have, maybe you have some cash flow coming in, but you always have that, like, nest egg or that emergency fund that if things really got soft in the market or whatever, you can at least tap into that before having to do something drastic, right? So I think that's super important. And yeah, we all would have made different decisions if we could go back and not invest in some certain deals in 2021 and all that stuff. So I guess timeline wise, where are we for you, right? Like, so single family, when did you start? I guess, when did that first one happen?
2017.
Okay. So you started in 2017. And then when did you flip to multifamily?
The year that I left my W-2 job. So early 2020, I dove 100% into multifamily. Spent the whole year just learning. Now I had time. At the same time, COVID shut everything down in California. So my time was very different. But I found a mentor. I worked with him for the whole year, managing his properties for him, working on underwriting properties. And so that led to a blossoming relationship. And now we're partners. And then the company that we currently manage today, Vertical Street, was born in late 2020.
Got it. Yeah. Our timelines are very similar. I quit my very stable-ish job in January 2020, not knowing what was going to happen a few months later. So my other business is recruiting. So nobody was hiring in 2020. So the recruiting industry just went to almost zero. So the blessing, the silver lining of that is it did give me a lot of time to learn, underwrite, how to figure out what markets are interesting to me and investors and things like that. So walk through that journey of 2020. And obviously you had a mentor. That's amazing. And I think education is probably the most important thing when you're starting your real estate journey, is making sure you talk to people, find mentors that have already gone through the hurdles that, so you don't have to jump through them, right? You can kind of learn from some of their mistakes. So how did you kind of start that multifamily journey? Because it is different underwriting a 100-unit apartment complex versus a single family house, right? There's a lot more that goes into it. So how did you kind of start the journey? And did you start with 100 plus units, or where did you start in the multifamily space?
Yeah, so 100% agreed that learn from other people's mistakes. And so find a mentor who can help you shave down that extra time and money spent if you were to try to do this on your own, or, you know, what have you. And so I got firsthand experience, and I jumped right into property management and asset management just by helping him manage his properties. He was still working full time. Okay. But the underwriting piece of it, spent time with him, taught me how from, you know, one of those underwriting tools out there. And then I would literally underwrite anything at that point that I saw. It was still limited because come 2020, everything shut down. So there weren't a lot of deals. People weren't selling, but the ones that I could find, I just didn't matter what size. I just ran it through the system just so that I could get the practice. Our buy box end of that year, typically it's not actually too far from what we currently have for right now, our criteria, but looking for at that time, 50 units or higher. Now we're looking at 100 units or higher. We wanted 80s or newer, individual everything, higher mixes of two bedrooms versus one. And that's what I was running through the pipeline, right? And then getting to get, by the end of all that practice, you just want to be able to know the market so well that you can underwrite a quick deal in 10 minutes and say, yeah, immediately, yes or no. And that's the point that I got to.
Yeah. And you also need to let the numbers be the truth, right? You can't get too emotional. Ooh, this is a good deal. This looks really cool. I really want this to work, because it's all Excel based, right? It's all a spreadsheet that you can manipulate to make everything look good.
Especially your first one, because you're so eager to buy something.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And so what markets were you looking? Because obviously you were living in California at this point and you know, California is not necessarily always a real estate landlord friendly market. So I don't know if you were looking in California. Where did you start looking?
Yeah, we don't actually buy in California. We buy in Arizona. So we have about 18 active syndications as of today. And that's all but one are in Arizona, both Phoenix and then down in Tucson. Part of that is because we look at the data. Where's population growth, job growth, cost of living, you name it. Also, part of that is because I grew up in Arizona and I'm very familiar with that market. Went to school in Tucson. So I've seen it grow tremendously over time and it still has a ton of upside now and in the future. So we are still very laser focused on one market.
Got it. So you said 18 deals active in Arizona. And so you acquired them all from 2021 till present. Is that right?
Yeah. So we, you know, the company has four partners. And once we joined forces, we combined the assets, right? We bought, several of my partners had properties individually with other partners before we merged and created VSV, but collectively now. And since then, we've bought a significant amount of properties.
Got it. And what's your style? Is it, obviously, if you're buying 1980s, I'm assuming you're doing the value add strategy. How are the deals doing? Just given if you're in the value add, if you bought, did you buy rate caps? Did you buy fixed debt? Like, how did you structure your deals?
We have five properties that were bought with bridge debt.
Okay.
All of them had rate caps.
Got it.
Right? A handful of them, we've definitely paused distributions on just to be conservative and hold cash on the property. Yep. And so, yes, we get a lot of questions from investors. Well, you know, should we be concerned? Why are we holding distributions? And so it's just education, right? Well, here's why. We want to save reserve so that we may need it for a future rate cap, or we want to hold cash on the property because vacancy picked up a little bit. So it's just about education. But yes, we did protect ourselves with rate caps. Thank goodness when we purchased over the last 2 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm sure you're well aware of some of the horror stories that are going on throughout the multifamily and just commercial real estate space with capital calls and foreclosures and just all this stuff. It's very interesting. So with the four partners, are all four partners solely focused on Arizona, or does each partner have their own geography that they focus on?
Nope. Our company as a whole is focused on the Arizona marketplace and we all play a different role. So we have someone, Kyle lives in Arizona. He is our boots on the ground and he is in charge of our acquisitions and our asset management team, right? And then we have a team here focused on capital markets and investor relations. So everyone kind of plays a role to their strengths and that's how we focus and make sure things are efficient.
Got it. I was going to ask you kind of where, because obviously there's a lot of jobs, if you will, in multifamily syndication. So what role do you play? Are you investor relations or are you kind of on the underwriting side? Like, where does that fit?
Yeah. I would say when we first started, and just like any startup, we are everything.
Yeah. Everybody is everything. Right.
Everything what the what. These days, now that we've built out our team, so I actually focus a lot of my time on our academy. So we do teach other people how to be syndicators. And then the other part of my role, I kind of touch on every business because I need to be hands-on on the asset side as well, alongside Kyle, to know and stay in the business to get things moving and make sure things are taught correctly, right, as part of the academy. And I also have my hands on the investor relations side, managing relationships with investors and then helping to raise capital. And then as a company, a lot of the operations as a company as well.
Got it. How do you handle property management? Are you third party? Are you fully integrated? Obviously, your company is called Vertical, so I didn't know if it was vertical integration or not.
I never realized that tie-in until you just said that. So no, we hire third-party property management. Do we have the scale to potentially dabbling into a vertically integrated PM? I would say potentially. Right now, though, I think we don't have. We want to focus on what we do well first.
Yeah.
Eventually, over the years, once everything's stable, then potentially that could be an option. But right now we hire third party. And in fact, we have different ones in Phoenix and in Tucson, just to keep things interesting.
Yeah, it's always good to have a few options, right? Because it's all about the people. The company is one thing, but it's all about the people that are actually operating the property. And so company A may lose somebody because they've got to move somewhere else, right? And so you've got to scramble to hire or find that right person. And so you said you have 18 deals. How many units total in Arizona?
We have over 1,500 units.
Okay. So these are all mostly smallerish, like
we have a mix. So our smallest in the portfolio is 22 units.
Okay.
Our largest is 252.
Got it.
And we have a wide range because a handful of our smaller deals we do with our students.
Mm.
And so we co-GP with them. We get help them get their foot in the door. We provide all the resources and we teach them and start to finish on how to run a syndication. And so that's why a chunk of our portfolio is on the smaller side.
Interesting. So how does that work? So if somebody's listening to this and they want to like dip their toe in the water and get some coaching, how does your academy work?
Yeah, so it's a very hands-on approach type academy. We know there's lots of them out there, but we just tailored it so that we were able to provide the most amount of value. It's basically very similar in fact that there's mastermind sessions, we bring guests in, we have office hours, we have coaching. What separates us is truly the hands-on part. So anytime that there's a due diligence on our properties, our students can come. They're welcome to join our property management calls to be a fly in the wall. A bonus, and not guaranteed, but a bonus is if we find a small deal that we like, but it's small for us, we typically take on larger deals. Mm-hmm. We'll open it up to the students and say who wants to join forces, and we'll pick students to partner with and co-GP on. And we'll teach you silver platter, soup to nuts, how to do everything. And so that's one of the benefits of the program that I think is really neat.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million and one gurus out there that have their own coaching things. But the thing I like about what you just said is you're working with you. Like a student is going to work with you and the leadership team versus a lot of these bigger course things where you have sub-coaches, right? Or people that are probably fairly active and fairly experienced in their own right, but you're paying good money and I want to work with the guy or the girl at the top, right? That's actually done the syndications for 20, 30 years. So yeah. I think it's super important to find a program that you can learn from the people that are actually doing all the work and have kind of the reputation. And because that's part of what you're buying, right? You're linking up with people that have experience, because if you're trying to find a 100 unit deal, Justin Dixon that has no experience can't just go buy it, right? You have to have somebody with track record and net worth and all that fun stuff to get the debt. So no, that's very, very awesome. I think that's awesome that what you're doing. How does your underwriting, how has it changed in the last few years? And when you're communicating with investors, if you're looking at deals now, typically the returns are different because of the debt is so much higher that it's hard to cash flow anywhere near the projected returns that people were projecting 2 years ago. How has that changed and how do you communicate that to investors?
Yeah. So part of this is adjusting our underwriting to be more realistic of what the marketplace is currently demanding. So a couple of things we've done, we were always conservative with things like rent growth. So in Arizona, if you've read the news in Arizona during COVID, we experienced 20 to 30% rent growth year over year. It was nuts, but we never underwrote for that, right? It was always the 2 to 4% depending on that submarket.
Yep.
So that still holds true. We actually put 0% rent growth in year one. We just don't know. We don't want to, you never know in that first year, especially when you're stabilizing the property. Our expenses, we've bumped that increase up. Before it was 3%. Now, depending on what that expense is, it might be 4 to 5% year over year growth. So little things that we tweak here and there. Cap rate when we sell the property, I'll call it the rule of thumb before was 10 basis point increase for every year that you plan on holding that. Well, no, that I don't think that's true anymore. It's what is your business plan and how will that impact what the cap rate will be when you sell the property?
Yeah.
And then the second piece of this is just educating the investor. So 5 years ago, it was very normal to get 8 to 10% cash on cash returns. That is not the case anymore, right?
Yep.
15 to 18% IRR. These days, it's more like 6 to 8% cash on cash return.
Yep.
Maybe it's 13 to 15% IRR. So you just have to help manage your investor expectations so that they're not surprised. And those are the numbers that if you truly think you can hit those are what we share. We don't overinflate it or try to overpromise anything.
And are you kind of actively looking at deals now? I mean, it's, you know, we're recording this on Halloween, you know, in 2023. So still in this very high interest rate market, the market is pretty scary right now. Like, are you still actively looking at deals?
Yes, we are always looking at deals. This was a slow year. We are just purchasing our first two properties of the year right now. Right? Mm. Last year, we bought quite a handful. This year, we were on the sidelines. We were patient, but we were still always looking at underwriting deals. And everyone, and I'm sure, has heard this, there's probably going to be an onslaught of deals coming in early next year.
Yep.
And so we want to be ready for that. We're prepping the capital. We're getting our systems and processes fine-tuned so that we are ready to buy the best deals. But I don't think when people say they're pencils down, I don't know if that's necessarily a really good strategy. It takes you out of the pulse, takes you out of the market. So we are still talking to brokers. Trust me, they have more time right now than they did in the few years past. So continue to build those relationships is what we're doing. And so that we're always top of mind for the best.
Yeah, brokers actually have to work now. You know, 2 years ago, they just sent an email out and 30 offers came in sight unseen almost. And you actually have to work for their commission as opposed to just sending out a deal. So you're solely focused still on Arizona, or have you started to kind of think about other markets?
Right now, it's still Arizona. We have strong teams, relationships, processes, vendors, partners, all that there. Could we expand over time? Possibly. We do have one property in the DFW area, but I think there is power in focus versus trying to spread. We are the lead sponsors, right? And so we need to make sure we're the expert in that market. Yeah. If you start to just do this too quickly or too often, then you're now relying on other people to be boots on the ground, or you're relying on other people to know that marketplace. And that's not the position we take.
Yeah, there is power in niching down into a specific market or a specific type of asset or whatever the case is. So no, I think it's, some people think about it, it's very limiting and, oh, I'm only going to look at this market and there's limited deals. But yeah, to your point, you become an expert and you start to hear about or get access to deals that aren't hitting the market, right? They're off-market deals, or they're, hey, this guy would sell at this price if you can get close, kind of a thing. And I'm sure that's a lot of the deals that you're looking at right now are maybe not even listed, or they're kind of pre-list and you can get a first crack at them, which is the best place to be, because once they hit the market, they probably already have gone through that soft launch emails chain already. So as you think about kind of the 2024, is it still steady as she goes as far as like looking at the same buy box in Arizona? And are there any interesting things that you're doing as far as raising capital through, do you do a fund model or do you do it deal by deal? Like how do you typically go about that?
Yeah, right now our buy box is still the same, very similar to what we're looking for in the last year. I don't think that'll change in 2024. Our investor capital is, I think, shifting. So in the past, we did do syndication asset by asset. Yep. This year, we launched our second fund with multiple assets in that, just because we polled our investors and that's what they said they wanted, diversification in a portfolio. We traditionally have our retail investors. We are also now entertaining a lot more relationships with family offices and more institutional capital. I think that's just a natural progression as you grow. Right. And so our strategy has shifted a little bit, but buy box is still the same. Return projections are very strict. We have a certain projection that we want to hit. And so that drives where we look.
Yeah, got it. No, it's very interesting. And then I guess as the academy grows, is that going to kind of become more of your focus, or how does that kind of shift? And obviously the good thing is you've got multiple partners. So you're not being pulled in 80 different directions. You've got people that can focus on different things. So is that kind of an area of focus to kind of help educate the next generation, if you will, of syndicators?
Yeah, not necessarily just syndicators. We all have a passion to spread the knowledge on financial education. With the academy, right now, we have about 60 students across the country. Mm. I like that it's not too big.
Yeah.
I'm able to give attention and provide as much value as possible to the current students. So we don't necessarily plan on growing this to be thousands of people. It's right now focusing on making sure that our students are successful, and they have been. Many of them have been buying their own deals. They're raising capital. They're running their properties. So it's really, really awesome to see them be successful.
Yeah. quality over quantity in my mind. I'd rather work with somebody that I can work hands-on with than somebody that's done a million deals that I don't get a chance to talk to, like we talked about earlier. So this has been very interesting. I want to kind of transition to the end, to these three pack of questions that I ask every guest that I didn't tease, I didn't share with you beforehand. So be prepared. So what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
Ooh, this is so cheesy, but it's like that Nike quote, just do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth. Analysis paralysis. So people get so hung up on like having everything perfect that they don't do anything. So don't do that. And at the same time, be patient because you don't want to just make a big mistake on your very first deal. So get 80-20 rule, get enough of the information to make a good decision, and then just go do it. Don't ponder too much further after that.
Yeah, I spent about 6 months in the analysis paralysis phase looking at different asset classes, and you're never going to have all the information, but you need to have enough to make an educated decision, right?
So absolutely.
There's that fine line of too much and not enough.
And a mentor can help you make that decision,
exactly right.
Push you.
That's exactly right. Because they will act so nonchalant about, oh yeah, just that's fine. Let's go. Yeah, exactly. And you'll be like, wait. So yeah, it is interesting to work with somebody that's done it before that just is like, yeah, just make an offer. It's a problem.
Yeah.
All right. Second question. What is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Real estate. Well, I'm not reading a real estate book right now. I'm reading Power Shift by Damon John, believe it or not, the guy from Shark Tank.
Yeah.
But a real estate business book. I would say just a good business book in general. Again, super overused, I know, but Dan Sullivan's Who Not How.
Yeah.
From there, after reading that, we immediately hired our first VA. And that just kind of changed the game, right? Like everybody else out there. But here's a caveat that nobody talks about. You can only outsource or delegate when you have your crap together. Okay. If you don't have the systems and process, if you don't, you yourself don't know the ins and outs of the business, how do you delegate that properly to somebody else? And so the danger of that is just wiping your hands when you're not ready, just for the sake of delegation. I think that's a dangerous thing to do. Who Not How is a great book, but then caveat with you need to make sure everything is in order before your house is in order before you let it go.
Yeah, I read that book and we just hired our first VA a month ago. So it is game changing. You know, we thought we had our stuff together, if you will. And it's amazing how much they pick up so quickly. And it's like, oh, I can give you more. I didn't realize, I thought I would only get this amount and you get, it's amazing. So no, I completely agree. I met Damon John once back in Philly at a conference. So he signed one of his books. I can't remember, Rise and Grind. Yeah, he signed that book. So interesting.
He's my favorite shark.
Yeah, he's cool. Very cool to meet in person. All right, last question. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life just off of your passive income from your investments, what would you do?
Oh, man. I mean, technically, we're in that position today, and this company is really a passion project, right? Helping others achieve their financial foundation and freedom. But if I couldn't do this, I love giving back in that financial sense still. So maybe it's teaching a class at a college on financial education. There's no reason why, actually it shouldn't even be college. There's no reason 10-year-olds shouldn't start learning about.
Yeah. It's probably more important that they learn it than the college kids, because it's too late by that point. They need to learn it early on.
So how do we start younger? So I think the financial education piece, I think, would continue on in some capacity.
No, I love it. I love it. It makes sense. So awesome. Well, Jenny, it's been amazing to chat with you. If people want to learn more about your company, what you're doing, the academy, how do they get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach out?
Sure. Our website is verticalstreetventures.com. We're on all social media platforms. So just connect with me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, reach out. I love to talk about real estate and hopefully I can help somehow.
Awesome. Jenny, really appreciate it. It was great to meet you and learn about your journey.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.